Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good morning to you. How are you doing? It's 3 minutes past 9 o'clock here on RTE Radio 1. We're ready for a brilliant show with you today. We've got lots coming up. Of course, you can still contact us in the usual way, 0870 32 32 32 51551 or email oliver@rte.ie. And also, we've lots of our music from Spotify as well. Loads coming up on the programme today. We're going to be talking to a Marvel superhero, so that's the nice thing to do. So you know where to contact us, and looking for your messages. It's been a tough morning reading the papers this morning and listening to Morning Ireland there, listening to the eyewitness accounts and relatives speaking about the crash of the 787, the Boeing 87, on takeoff in India, only in the air for mere seconds. The miracle of seat 11 is the main story in the newspapers this morning. "I don't know how I'm alive," says stunned sole survivor of the crash, and that headline replicated across the newspapers in a picture of his boarding pass pictured there. He said it was 30 seconds after takeoff. There was a loud noise and then the plane crashed. "It all happened so quickly," said Mr. Ramesh from Leicester in England. "When I got up, there were bodies all around me. I was scared, stood up and ran, and there were pieces of the plane everywhere." So very sad. And as I say, listening to the relatives, and our hearts go out to them this morning. As I say, the newspaper is concentrating on the one story of hope this morning, the miracle of seat 11. And people wonder why you might focus on the fact that there's one survivor amongst all of those people who've lost their lives. Well, as human beings, we look for hope all the time. That's what we look for. Just like if there's an earthquake or a bombing, and we look for that one child is pulled out of the rubble 3 or 4 days later. So our hearts go out to those people. And I'm sure with so many British citizens on the aircraft that there'll be relatives here in Ireland listening to this morning too. And speaking of poignancy, Emer McLeisel writes in the Irish Times this morning, "My late dad's tropical fish met an untimely end, and I'm sad, so sad to say it was my fault." That's the headline, but when you read into it, it's really a piece about a local town, Johnstown in County Kildare, which many of you will have passed if you pass the big football at Naas, if you're heading towards Dublin or heading towards Naas. If you're heading towards Dublin, it's on the right-hand side, and obviously if you're coming the other way, it's on the left-hand side. But she writes very eloquently today about that, about the town and the closing of the pub where many family occasions were held, and then her dad's funeral was held there as well, and going to visit the garden centre and loving tropical fish, and then her dad taking home the tropical fish, a man of great patience seemingly. One day, at 11 years old, she decided she was going to help him by cleaning out the tropical fish tank. So very carefully, and I was very impressed when she got when you're cleaning out fish, you have to put them in their own water. So you take a container, put them in their own water, and you put them in there while you're cleaning. So she got a saucepan with a little bit of water, put all his very precious and very expensive, if any of you have tropical fish, they can be extremely expensive. She put them into a pot and proceeded to clean the tank, and then realizing it's a huge job, she decided to clean all the pebbles and clean the sides of the fish tank. And as she walked over, she felt a squish. And unfortunately, one of the tropical fish met an untimely end because the saucepan was so shallow, they were jumping out. But the reason she writes this is she said her dad came home and he managed not to give out to her at all. He just held it back. It's very poignant when you read it. It's on page 9 of the Irish Times this morning. "My parents returned to a sodden tropical fish graveyard, but in fairness to my dad, he kept anger at bay. I'd just been trying to help." Isn't that nice? And then at night, "I'd kill her!" he was still around for Father's Day. "I might gift him a few things to restart his tropical fish collection, and we console ourselves with the news that the Johnstown Inn might be reopening at the end of the year. We might head over to the garden centre for a few bits, but I might go anyway, for old time's sake." But that's just caught my eye this morning in the newspaper. Emer writing very eloquently about her dad as coming up to Father's Day. Speaking of fathers, in the Irish Mirror this morning, Sandra Mallon speaking to Christy Dignam's daughter, Kira. A statue would be an honour for my dad. Christy's daughter, Kira, loves tribute idea for iconic singer. The daughter of the late Christy Dignam has said she would be honoured if a statue was erected to remember her famous dad ahead of his second anniversary today. It's his second anniversary today. It's not amazing how quickly that passed. I remember being on Rising Time and speaking about Christy, who had met on a number of occasions. He was here with the concert orchestra, as were all of Aslan. Of course, he was interviewed many times on television and radio. I think people really felt an affinity to him. Kira told how the Dignam family were blown away when Unpust put the Aslan frontman on a stamp as part of a special commemorative set called Iconic Irish Voices. You might remember that Seamus Begley, Sinead O'Connor, Shane McGowan, all of whom we lost in 2023. When Dad died, we had people saying they wanted to talk to the local authorities about erecting a statue. Wouldn't that be lovely? And again, very poignantly, especially coming up to Father's Day, and I'm 25 years in the club, without a dad. And the Dubliner said she was finding feathers everywhere after her dad died. And for a while afterwards, everywhere I looked, you'd find a feather. Thanks. Get some comfort from that. And that's in the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Now, we all know the song, don't we? We all know the song.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly.
Well, did you know today, as Molly Malone has been in the news more than maybe she should be lately in the last few years, it's Molly Malone Day today in honour of one of the Ireland's most popular folk legends. The Dublin fishmonger's story is etched in the national psyche, immortalised in statue and song on the 13th. And we know all about the statue and the fact they've had to put security guards in to protect her decency and her legacy, etc. But in the paper today, in the Irish Daily Mirror, Luca Flanagan talks about Molly Malone's origins. The opening lines of the song in her honour are well known, yet its roots suggest it may not be an Irish song at all. What? Well, Molly Malone is not Irish? The evidence of the song's existence was first recorded, not the song, in 1876. That would have been a miracle. In an American college songbook. Americans! Though published in Boston, Massachusetts, the song is still heavily associated with Ireland. But there's loads of, when Irish eyes are smiling, you know, lots of different songs written in the United States by Irish people, some by, not by Irish people, about Ireland. But they become stalwarts and we just adopted them. It was republished in 1884 with the London publishers Francis Brothers and Day releasing a version composed by Scotsman James Yorkstown. And there are many theories claiming Molly Malone was a real person in the 17th century. But no such basis has been provided. But we all know Molly Malone, don't we? If you ever went down to Moore Street years ago, you'd know Molly Malone. She's still there. Lots of tourists fighting to jump on top of her and rub the statue. It's just a bit odd, isn't it? It's just a bit odd. Anyway, what a lovely song. That's Jim McCann, by the way, I think. Is it Jim? He was singing with the Dubliners, Jim. When he had a stint with the Dubliners. Ah. We'll play that on the way home in the car. Now, are you a football fan? Soccer fans and pundits were stunned yesterday by a Scouser speaking Spanish. Why? Why wouldn't a Scouser speak Spanish? Trent Alexander-Arnold recently left Liverpool to sign for Real Madrid, angering many supporters of the club, but some Reds fans booing him at the last game. The England defender was at Liverpool since he was 6 years old. He was in the academy from when he was 6 years old. After being welcomed at a press conference yesterday in Real Madrid, Trent Alexander-Arnold made his way to the stage and was expected to say, "All right, kids, how are you?" That didn't actually happen. And what he said was this.
Madrid, Trent Alexander-Arnold.
All right, kids. Here's the expectation. Here's the reality.
Buenas tardes a todos. Gracias tanto al presidente Florentino Pérez como al club Real Madrid por esta oportunidad. Fichar por un club como Real Madrid no sucede todos los días. Es un sueño hecho realidad. A la Madrid.
Now, if you watch the clip, you just see this open mouth. The Spanish journalist, the Spanish football, but he kept it to himself all the way along. He didn't say anything in all the interviews he did before that, until it was signed. But anything he said, he never spoke Spanish. Nobody knew he spoke Spanish. The Guardian writes there was kind of a double take as he went on. An increasing admiration, a very good start. Delivered smoothly. Cupla Focal, that's all you need. Cupla Focal. That's it. Dos cerveza, por favor. Uno más. Michael upstairs can get a table for two. And that's just, it'll get you by. And then, of course, inevitably, in your holiday resort, they just go, "Yeah, you want a table for two?" You go, "Okay, yeah, table for two." At the press conference afterwards, he was asked how long had he been learning. "A few months," he replied. "A few months." And there were those who were suspicious that Alexander-Arnold's departure from Liverpool was longer in the making. The quality of his Spanish was the evidence. I don't know. You could ask him a couple of questions in Spanish and then you'll know. Then you'll absolutely know. Band school homework, says Simon Cowell, because he'd know. Fair to Simon Cowell. He's an educational guru, isn't he? Simon Cowell called for a ban on homework yesterday, claiming it puts too much pressure on children. He said, "We're getting to a point where the word phone comes up." And I'm very worried about how much kids can see at a certain age. I grew up learning things at the right time. I'm just petrified of having access. That really worries me. But why are they doing homework? They put too much pressure on kids. You're getting up at 7 in the morning. You're coming home at 5, 6 in the afternoon and the evening. You got to do 2 hours of homework. The best thing that ever happened to us was when one of the kids went to a creche that did their homework with them after school care. And we came home, the homework was done. And probably like many people who are listening today, Simon Cowell says that he spends a lot of time trying to do the homework as well. They're 11, 12 years old. It's too much. Say any teacher watching wants to ban homework, you'll be happier kids and they'll do better. Well, see, they, you know, it's, you got to train for studying as well. But we have three different kids who are completely different, and you could give them exactly the same task to do over 5 minutes or 15 minutes. One would take an hour, one would take 5 minutes, and the other would take 15 minutes. It just doesn't match up. Each kid is different. The worst thing, can I just say, the worst thing that happened to us was when one of the secondary schools brought in iPads for teaching. They got rid of the school books, and you still bought the book because you needed the code from it, but you never looked at it again. And once that iPad had to come into the bedroom for people, it had to be on the internet. And despite all the safeguards and software, that ruined it. It was the end for this particular child, and it just took so much time. In the newspapers today, new confirmation pledge will ask teens to abstain from smoking vapes and drugs. Bishops hope to warn of the dangers that young people face. And actually, we have Bishop Michael Reuter on the line. Good morning, Bishop.
Good morning, Shay.